Okay, Parsha's Vayelech. So Vayelech is the shortest Parsha possible. First Parsha in the Torah.
What page is that on?
That's on page 1000 and...
94.
Thank you. So, what's interesting to note about Parsha's Vayelech, many times it's Shabbat Shuvah, many times it's together with Nitzavim, in which case it would be before Yom Rosh Hashanah. But it's definitely associated and affiliated with the high holidays, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. And one thing that's interesting to note, and the Zohar speaks about this point, is that even though the time the Zohar is written, it's arguable whether they had Parshas at that time. But the concept is that Parshas Nitzavim means to stand. Vayelech means to walk. What's the difference between standing and walking? So standing is done by Malachim. That's why when we do Kedusha, we stand straight, feet together. Why feet together? Because an angel doesn't have legs, doesn't have two legs. And that's what we said about the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah, the Medrash says, is like a very mean-looking guy. And everyone runs away from him. Says, oh my gosh, this guy is really a mean guy. And then the tzaddik is someone who walks over to the mean guy and takes the blanket, it says, off his legs, and he says, this guy has no legs. What are you scared of? So what does that analogy tell us? So it's an angel has one leg standing because he can't walk. What does it mean an angel can't walk? And that's in contrast to Vayelech. Vayelech is walking. So it says Moshe says he's going to die, and he says Vayelech Moshe. Moshe walked. Then he tells him he's going to die. He says Ben Me'avashim Shar Noch. I'm 120 years old. Velo Uchal Old Lotzeis Velovo. I can no longer go in and out. Go out and come. Which means he's getting to the point where he's going to die, and when you die, you can't walk anymore. So what does it mean you can't walk anymore? So the angel is the same as in this regard as the soul. So a soul cannot walk either. What does it mean a soul cannot walk? Because in this world, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Yafesh Ha'achas, the 1 second of pleasure in the world to come is greater than all the pleasure in this world. And Elio Dessler says that this means, in Smichtav Elio, he says that this means if you take every single pleasure that any person ever had in the history of the world and you put it into 1 second, imagine how much pleasure that is. He says that doesn't compare to even to 1 second of pleasure, 1 ounce of pleasure, 1 millisecond of pleasure in the world to come. That's how much pleasure the world to come is all about. Now, it's very nice to believe that, but I think it's telling us a very important point, which is that more so than just about pleasure in the world to come, is this telling us that this world is not a world of pleasure. This world is a world that you try to get pleasure because you realize that you're created for pleasure at the end of the day, but it's not a world of pleasure. So you're going to try your whole life to get pleasure. It's going to be frustrated. It's not going to work out because this world is not a world of pleasure. The world to come is a world of pleasure. That's where you get the pleasure. But this world, you could try your heart out to get pleasure. You're not going to get it. It's just not possible. It's fleeting. So what is this world about? So the Mishnah continues, Yafesh Ha'achas, Tshuva Maisim Tovim, Mazim Kolchem Abba. That Tshuva and Maisim Tovim are greater than all the world to come. What does that mean? So we explained in the Book of Life that I wrote, and other times we always explained that Tshuva is about defining yourself as a person, becoming an individual, becoming the type of person that can choose their own destiny. And tshuva is greater than the whole world to come, because the world to come, you get pleasure, it's really pleasurable, but you can't enjoy the pleasure because it's not your own. It's not yours. But if you combine this world and the next world, then you choose a person to become yourself in this world, and that person can merit to get pleasure because once you become a self, an individual that makes choices in this world, then you can earn your world to come. And therefore, it's not something that God just gives you for free. And therefore, you need both worlds together. You need this world and the next world. This is a world in which we walk because that means it's a world we choose, and we could choose actions that could turn us into individuals, and we could choose, like we said, is a shortcut, which is to choose yourself as an individual, choose the kind of person you could be, you want to be. And that's what it means to walk. To walk means we're not like angels. Angels have no choice. Angels God sends against us to fight us. It says he sends the Yetzirah against us to kill us every day. Why does he do that? Because when we fight the Yetzirah, we're able to develop ourselves as individuals. We're able to become unique people. And that comes as a result of the difficulty in this world, of the Midat HaDin, of this world being a very difficult, complicated world. And even though we don't know why bad things happen to good people, and why bad things happen in this world, we can see that there's a purpose. The purpose is that it enables us to become individuals, it enables us to become unique people. And that's why we fight the Yetzirah every day. That's why we have to fight, whether we like it or not, we have to fight this world. That's why this world is not a world of pleasure, because this world is about becoming yourself, and becoming yourself only could be in an environment where there's difficulty and complications and problems. And that's what Vayelech is about. Vayelech is telling you that in order to become someone who's worthy of the pleasure that you get in the world to come, it only comes if you utilize this world of complications, this world of difficulty, in order to use the friction that God created this world as an environment to become an individual. And this week's parasha, it's not a coincidence that we said today, Nafshi b'shelasi v'amir b'chashasi, that's the words of Esther. Because Esther is hinting this parasha, says in the Gemara Maseches Chulin, Esther min haTorah minayin. Where do we know Esther in the Torah? Right? So Esther is hinted to in the Torah, it's in this week's parasha.
That is Hamin Ha'ed.
Is that the same Esther?
That's Haman.
Oh, Esther.
Is that the same Esther from the Purim story?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it possible, though, that maybe the reason why there is so much pain, so because Hashem wants us to return them? Because I read several Tehillim, you know, that say that God implements suffering, you know, this world to mean to influence us to do it to Shuvah. I know at least for us as Jews, you know, but I don't know about everyone else in the world, but like, you know, do you think maybe that might be why there's so much pain? Because he wants us to come back to him.
So part of coming back to him is choosing to come back to him. Yeah. This is what Yom Kippur is about. Yom Kippur is a day in which we do tshuva. What does it mean to do tshuva? The tshuva starts with Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is a day in which we could define ourselves or choosing the kind of people we want to be. That's what Rosh Hashanah does. And why do we do that? Why is that important? Because you need to be an individual to choose to love God, to have a relationship with God. So in order to return to God, it's not just enough just to say, I'm going to return to God because I was forced to because of the problems I have in my life. It's that the problems you have in your life enable you to shape yourself as an individual, become a person who can then choose to return to God. It's not enough to just be forced to return to God. God can't force you to return to Him. But God can create an environment in which you could choose a self that can then choose to connect to God. Okay. Remember, that's two different steps. That's why Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah are two different steps.
Okay.
And
It is very difficult. It's very sad and tragic. You know?
It is definitely sad and tragic world.
Yeah, yeah. We just don't know why. I mean, I was at Eish HaTorah last week, and Rabbi Davis was saying that we don't know God's ways, and we don't know like, you know, why there's so much pain. So
we don't know.
We have to accept it at face value.
We don't know why, but the thing we do know, and the thing that will help us is understanding that there's a difference between the reason why God does something and the purpose why God does something. Those are two different things. Purpose has to do with function, has to do with what we use it for. There's a big difference between that and why. You know, there's a why and there's a why. So the why, we don't know why. We don't know why God does things. We don't even know why we do things. We don't know our own motivations for things. Our own motivations are unclear. Like, really, you ask me, why'd you do that? So there's two answers to the question. Why'd you eat breakfast? So answer number one is, I eat breakfast because I was hungry. That's the smaller why. That's the purpose. That you know, as you use that food to satisfy your hunger. The purpose of the eating was to satisfy your hunger. But that's not really why you did it, because no one forced you to do it. So why'd you do it? What do you mean why? I did it because I was hungry. But you didn't have to do that. Why did you do it? Why? So the answer to the second level why is always the same. It's because you wanted to. There's no justification for it. you know, people don't like to think that way because they don't like to take responsibility for their actions. They like to think, well, I had no choice. I was hungry. I had to eat. Well, no one forces you to eat. You could starve if you want, or you could not eat if you want. So why'd you do it? I don't know. I did it because you wanted to. In other words, you chose to do it because that's what you wanted to do. That's who you are. That's your person who needs to eat. So you decided that you're going to eat, not because you were hungry. Like people say, you make me angry. Really, I made you angry? I didn't make you angry. You just decided to be angry. Chose to be angry. No, I didn't. It wasn't for you. I wouldn't be angry. No. It's you decided that you're going to react with anger because of the situation that you were in with regard to me. But that doesn't mean I made you do anything. I don't make you do anything. That's not true. I was forced. No, you're not forced. You could choose anything you want. You could choose to be calm if you want to. How can I choose to be calm? It's impossible. It's not impossible. You could choose anything. That's the Ram teaches you. There's two levels to free will. One level is a level of action, which is something we feel we really don't have a choice. We're born a certain way, certain inclinations. And what we're supposed to do, if we want to change ourselves, it takes a long time. It's a long procedure over months and years where I train myself. I say to myself, you know, you're an angry person. Well, how do I stop being angry? Well, do a lot of actions that will bring you to the other side. What's a lot of actions mean? Well, start driving behind people like old ladies. Start driving behind people who drive slow. And you can be going, but it's going to train you over months and years like a dog. A dog in a circus jumps through hula hoops or America's Got Talent, right? Does all these tricks. Well, cool. Well, how did you? Because you gave him a treat. So over time, the dog learns after a few months and years, or a cat, you can even do it, teach a cat. You give enough treats, they'll do whatever you want.
There are two things we can control. We can control our actions. We can control what we say and do. And we can control the way the world lands on us. We can't control what the world does.
Yeah, we can't control other people either.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You can't. That's what I mean by the world.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that I'm reading Kohelet now. I'm really studying Kohelet, and it seems to me that in his lament and in his frustration that he spent all this energy and effort in acquiring wisdom, and he can't understand God because humans can't understand God.
Yeah.
We can read Torah and we can find human justifications in Torah, and all these sages speculate. People speculate. This is what this means. This is what that means. Doesn't mean you know. You can't know God. Okay. God is past human.
And humans can't understand other what other humans.
I can't understand myself.
What makes some guy get up in the morning one day and decide, and he's gonna take out a gun. He kills five people. You know, almost every single day. Some part of the world. There's some horrible, you know, despicable tragedy. What causes these people to do these things, Rabbi?
So what I'm trying to explain is that what Tshuva teaches us is that there's a new level of free will that we have. And this is something that most people are not aware of. What I'm trying to explain is that there's a level called actions in which we're like animals, in which we have to train ourselves over long periods of time to become, to change our behavior. And that is the way most people live their life. Most people live their life on a level of, look, I'm born with certain character traits. And these character traits kind of control me. And what can I do about it? I was born up and raised this way. This is my parents were. And I don't have a choice because I have to really it takes time to become a different person. That's the rest of the year. The 10 days of tshuva, Rama says that we have another level here, another level of free will, which could overcome all that. That level of free will says to us, like I said before about the Yitzhar, it's no legs. It's a voice in your head. That's all it is. A voice in your head telling you, what do you mean? I was born this way. My parents raised me this way. No. To realize something, you are a human being. Human beings are not like a cat. A cat can't stop himself to say, what kind of cat am I? A cat can only make choices, decisions in their life. I'm going to eat or not. I'm hungry. I eat. I cross the street, don't want to get hit by a car, you know, I like to take a shower, I wash myself. These are things that are done by function, done by actions. But then there's another level of free will the Rambam teaches us, this tshuva introduces, that totally opens a whole new world. It says in 1 second you can change your whole self. Because you look at yourself not as a person who does actions, you look at yourself as a person who is a person. What kind of person am I? I'm a calm person. What do you mean? You're born angry. That doesn't matter. It's just a voice in my head. It's all it is, a voice in my head telling me to be angry. I don't have to listen to the voice. I can say, look, I'm not an angry person. In 1 second, I can say I'm not an angry person. Now, you have to tap into this level and say, you know what, this is who I am. But you have that ability. It's not out of your control. No one makes you angry. Remember, nobody makes you angry. It's just a voice in your head. And once you see that, it opens a whole new world for you. It makes you realize that you can define yourself not just on what you do, but on looking at yourself as a whole person and saying who you are and what path am I going on, what general direction am I going in my life. This opens a whole new world of control over yourself and a whole new world of choice. And that's what it means, vayelech means to walk in that manner, that you're able to actually walk on a path. Rama says it's like driving. It's basically like driving. It's basically like instead of looking at every step of your life as a different step, you look at it like, look ahead of you. Look at where you're going. And that's what God says, I place before you chayim and tov, life and good, and mavis and rab, death and bad. So God says to us, I'll give you advice. Choose the life and good. Thanks for the advice. Like, it's obvious. Obviously, I wouldn't choose life and good. But most people don't understand this because they don't understand they can look at their life that way. They think their life is about what I do the next moment, what I do next moment. And when you look at your life in a broad manner, you basically understand this concept of being able to choose, to say that I am not controlled by outside forces, and therefore I can choose to become the type of person I want to become, and therefore the reason I do things is because I want to do that. There's no justification. And that's what makes us like God. The Rambam says is makes us different from animals, makes us like God. That we say that God made us in Selmuk, God made us in the image of God. What does it mean, the image of God? Everyone has different opinions about image of God. What does that mean? I'm sure you studied a lot of them. The Rambam says image of God means that just like nobody tells God what to do, right? Nothing justifies God's will. When we say we don't understand God, it's not because it's a mystery. It's because God does things because he wants to. And there's no justification for it. Why, God, did you do this? I did it because I want to. I did it because I chose to do it. But why? Well, I could tell you if you want to live, understand me on the level of decisions, the level of individual actions, I could say, look, my actions have justification. My actions have a purpose. Evil has a purpose. Evil's purpose is to create an individual. And it makes an environment of a world that enables people to become themselves. But that's not why God does it. That's just the purpose, right? The purpose why we eat breakfast is because we're hungry. We want to get satisfy hunger. But why did you do it? Why I did? I just don't know. That's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. Yeah. If you live your life on that level, especially during this time, this is the time we're supposed to live a life on that level. Because you can't live your life your whole life. You can't say, I do things because I want to your whole life. Because you're going to go crazy. Because you have to live your life for purpose. Your purpose is a major part of our life. We have to understand why we do things on a simple level. But when you're trying to understand God's mind, the reason we can't understand God's mind is because we can't understand justification when it's on the level of why, where we're just, it's a function of will. That's all it is, a function of will. And the analogy to God really is in ourselves, because we also have that level of saying, I don't understand why I do things, because I just do them because they're meant to be. They're what I want. It's my function, my will. There's no justification for that. And that's really what makes us free. That what makes us free is the ability to choose like God.
To say want feels capricious to me. Because there's many things I want. I want to grow hair on the top of my head. It's a frivolous thought. But I try to live my life on purpose. I try to live with what I intend, not what I want, but what I actually, in other words, I choose. I'm going to try and do this, and then I go ahead and I do it. And I think that distinction is really critical, Rabbi. I think it's imperative on us. It's incumbent on us to decide what it is we intend out of our lives. I can give an example. I know that my wife, who's a little heavy set, is always concerned about her appearance. Always. Every time we walk out of the house together, I compliment her on something she's wearing, the earrings. I don't say you look thin today. I started doing it about 12 years ago, and it's like magic. It's a way of sort of reinforcing her good feelings about herself, and it's a good thing for our marriage. But it was something that I began by doing it consciously. I intended. I wanted her to feel better about herself. I intended an action that contributed to her feeling good about herself. This is a really good example
because really Yom Kippur is about love and relationships, and therefore this is a perfect example. So let me ask you, this is where this comes in. You said intend, but why did you do that? Why did you compliment your wife? Why?
I did it because I love my wife, and I understood that in the Mishigas chatter that goes on in her head, she feels insecure. She was heavy when I met her. I fell in love with her heavy. It's a matter of indifference to me. But it seemed like such a simple gesture to remember to do. To reinforce our relationship. It was easy on my part, and it brought goodness to our marriage.
So it's very beautiful, and I think
very good. I mean, it's very. I think maybe I might try to, like, you know, put my own personal self, you know, because I mean I've had my own like struggles with, like, you know, physically and emotionally. For a long time, I had weight problems too. I mean, like, because I was very, very thin. You know, I mean, like, you know, and for a long time, I only weighed just over 100 pounds. I was like a little jockey, you know. But then eventually, my body filled out. You know, but I've struggled with a lot of things, and I have a lot of insecurity inside myself. You know, by a lot of things. You know, and maybe I should try to start maybe give myself some compliments. You know, like, you know, try to pat myself on the back. You know. And maybe it might help me to work.
Who doesn't struggle?
Have more self-esteem, it's not easy. I mean, it's tough, you know. But I guess it can work. You know, I guess it can work out. You know,
100%. So what I think this clarification, this example you give is a really perfect example, because love is exactly the same. Love is a function of choice. Love is a function of will, desire. And it's not. It's the question is, when you say you love someone, you ask what's the reason? Why do you love someone? So there's the same exact two levels when it comes to love. So usually when someone says, why do you love me? So the reason is, it's a function of purpose. You say, I love you because you're beautiful, you're kind, you're smart, you're giving. There's a list of reasons that we give for ourselves why we love somebody.
My wife said to me about 20 years ago that I loved her for precisely those reasons that her first husband loved her in spite of. So what I saw in her that I loved is what her first husband forgave in her. So I don't know what he saw that he loved in her, but it's an interesting That was a really profound statement to me, because I have no idea. To me, I love her.
This is exactly the point. So when you say you make the list, what you're saying is there's a mishnah pekei avos, an incredible mishnah. It says there's two types of love: ava shetluya bedavar, a love that's dependent upon something external, and ava she'ena tluya bedavar, it's not dependent on anything external. Now, the love that's dependent on something external, we can relate to. People understand. Why do you love me? The list. But let's say the list goes away. Let's say you thought she was pretty when you got married to her, but then as time goes on, you see her without makeup on for all this time, and then she's not pretty anymore. Let's say she's nice when you met her, but then after time, you know, you spend so much time with her, she's not as nice anymore. So the Mishnah says if it's dependent upon that list, then when the list goes away, inevitably the list is going to go away. Then the love goes away. So how do you avoid that? How do you get to the point where you love someone without the list? It's not dependent on anything. So you ask someone, why do I love you? For no reason? It's not dependent on anything? There's no list? So what does that Mishnah mean when it says it's not dependent on anything? So I think what Mishnah is saying is an amazing thing. Mishnah is saying that there's two ways to look at a relationship. One is, what do I get out of the relationship? What does it give me? What do I use this relationship for my purposes? There's another level, which says that, why do you love me? Why do I love you? I love you because we were meant to be with each other from the beginning of time. You are my spouse. There's no justification. There's no reason. There's nothing I get out of it. It's because you're me. We're meant to be together. And that's what you're saying. You're saying this woman, despite all what this guy didn't like, it's because you like, because this is your wife. This is your person. This person was meant for you. That's really what you're saying. And that means there's no justification for it. There's no reason. It's just because I chose her. Because this is what I want. What I mean? Because this is who I am. When I say what I want, when I'm saying this is me. When I say I choose to not be angry, not because of some external thing, because I choose that thing, because that's who I want to be. This is who I am, in essence, my essential self. And that's what the Rambam says, that there's two ways to serve God. One is that of yira, one is that of fear. What does it mean, fear? It means seeing consequences. Fear means to see consequences because of the word see. So we do it for reward, or we do it for to avoid punishment. Those are two reasons we do it for fear. That means there's an external reason why I serve God. I serve God because I want the cake. You know, like the kid says, like Rabbi Rudiman used to say, when I was a kid, they used to put a cake in front of me. It says, learn the Gemara, you get the cake. So basically, I use the Gemara to get the cake. So basically, the relationship with God is, God, I serve you because I have a list of reasons why I get out of you. But then Ron says, that's not really a great way to do things. That's for immature people. What's a mature person? A mature person says, I love God, I serve God out of love. What's serve God out of love? So how does he define love? This is amazing. Ron says, how do I define love? It seems like it's crazy what he says. He says, Osta emes, you do the truth because it's the truth. You do the truth, osa emes, you do the truth because it's the truth. And then in the end, the reward is going to come. So I have people in yeshiva, they tell me, I learned with them this halacha. What does it mean? It's really serious. I joke around, I say it's like constipation. What do I mean constipation? This person says, I love God. I love God for no reason at all. He sounds like he's constipated because he doesn't know what it means. What do you mean I love God for no reason? I see this guy in yeshiva. They say, I don't want anything out of this. I just want to love God. But you have no idea what you're talking about. When you say you love God because of the truth, you're saying this is me. It's because God is me. God is who I'm. This is my destiny. This is who I am, and I recognize that. I'm not doing it to get reward, because it's like my spouse. It's like this beautiful mission, Gemara in Maseches Brachos. Gemara says that when a couple used to get married in Eretz Yisrael, the people used to go to them and ask them, Matzah or Motze? Matzah means, do you have a happy marriage? Matzah Isha Matzah Tov, like King Solomon said in Proverbs. Matzah, did you find your spouse? Matzah Isha, you found the wife, you found good? Or is it Motze Ani? Motze Ani Mar Matzah Isha. In Kohelet, in Kohelet it says, I find women to be a fate worse than death. Right? So later, Kohelet
can drive you crazy because he says,
But the same author, Proverbs, is written by King Solomon. Kohelet's written by King Solomon. So in Proverbs, he says, I found a wife, he's found good. Then it says, I find woman to be a fate worse than death. So which one is it? So the Gemara says that they used to ask people, Matzah, is it, are you happy? Or Motzah, are you miserable? What kind of question is that to ask a newly married couple? So it's not that they were asking how their marriage is. They're telling them advice. It's a brilliant Gemara. The Gemara is saying, if you want to be happy, then you have to be Matzah. If you want to be miserable, be Motzah. Why? It's the same word. Matzah, the same word. Except one's in the past and one's in the present. Matzah, Isha, Matzah Tov means you found your spouse. You accept them for who they are, for everything. You don't have a list. You got married to a person, you had a list to get married. Once you find your person, then you throw out the list. You say, this is who I marry. I accept them for everything. They could turn ugly, they could turn mean, this is my person. I accept them. Then you're going to be happy. Matzah, Isha, if you found your spouse and you accept them for who they are, Matzah Tov, you found good. But if you're Motzah, you're finding them, you have your list, you're finding them out. Every day you get up, you say, let me see if this person lives up to my expectations. I have my list to see if they work out. Then you're going to be my mother, so you're fate worse than death. Because no one can live with somebody else who analyzes them and scrutinizes them to death to say, are you living up to my expectations? And that's the difference between tshuva, which is on action, and tshuva, which is on your whole self. That's the difference between choice, I like to say choice and decisions. Decisions are individual. Decisions are, I have a list. I want to get stuff out of life. I want to use the world to get what I want. I eat breakfast because I'm hungry. But then there's another level, which is I do things because I want to. Because me, this is who I am. When I say I want to, it's a function of will. It's because it's me. I recognize that this person or this action or this activity or this behavior is something that is me. It's who I am. And if I'm choosing it because I recognize that that's my truth. So Ram says, if you want to serve God out of love, you have to understand there's this concept called truth in the world. Truth is who you are. And when we say good, things are good, we're not saying they're necessarily morally good. We're not saying that they're great, they're fantastic. We're saying it's me. When God says, Vayarsam ki tov, I saw that the light that he created was good. He's saying this is me, this is who I am.
How do you know what where truth is? Because that little voice that runs in my head usually misleads me. usually steers me in the wrong
direction. So there's two ways to know what's right, what's truth. Remember, truth in Judaism can only be a function of objective, because truth in this world, there's no objective truth in this world. This world is a lie. This world can't exist because we say God is one. The truth is God is one. That means nothing else could exist. It means we don't really exist. So that's what the Talmudist calls this world Amma Deshukah. It's a world of lies. It's not a true world. It's not truth. So the real truth is that we can't find truth. It's impossible to find truth. Truth has to be colored by you, by your vision, because your vision is all you got.
So we all have our own small t truth.
That's right.
We don't get to the capital truth.
Capital T truth is outside of this world. It has to be.
MS is truth.
So what does MS? What does MS mean? MS means your personal MS. It means that we're used to the thing. You can't scientifically prove there's a God.
With a small Aleph, not a big Aleph.
Yeah. Exactly.
Not a capital Aleph.
Yeah, I think you have to. I guess you have to define like yourself by your actions, and like define other people by their actions, and try to learn to like to adjust, and make compromises.
So when we're dealing with truth, it has to be. In other words, when we're saying you know something. So there's three levels to understanding the world. One is called, we say, is called emunat tefillah, which means faith. Faith means you just accept it for no justification at all. It's like like Christianity. Christianity believes that the less logic there is, the better. Because so Judaism says that's terrible. That's emunat tefillah. That's a tasteless belief. If you just believe things for no reason, that's not good. So what is good? Emunah. Emunah means belief belief means there's evidence. There's evidence to what you're saying. That's like, it's like when you get married. You get married, you say, look, I have reason to believe this person is going to be a good person. Do I know for sure? It's impossible to know for sure because you never lived with the person yet. But you don't want to decide to marry someone in Las Vegas when you get drunk and you end up get married by Elvis. You know?
I was married by Elvis. We had a second marriage. We went to Las Vegas with the kids. My kids were grown, and we did it a few years ago. We went to Graceland Wedding Chapel, and we had Elvis remarry us.
Or you can go to Las Vegas, and Las Vegas. I think they have those places where you can just like drive through. It was like
almost like drive through
like
marriage,
like you're going to a Burger King. You know, like you drive
no,
through.
No, listen, they really have it there. Yeah. And I arranged the whole thing. I got a great big stretch limousine, and we drove to this chapel. And I had to promise to love her tender. She had to promise not to treat me like a hound dog. And we got remarried.
Jamie and Philbin, I would have loved to have seen it. You know,
I have a video.
Maybe you want to bring it in sometime. Can you do it on your phone? You know,
I don't know. Maybe I have no idea. I'll ask my wife. She has it. If I can bring it in, I'll bring it in and show it to you.
I think another thing that was very important that you said was like. We talk about like forgiving, and it's very, that's a very important thing, and that's something I also struggle with, have a hard time with, like forgiving, you know, like other people and myself, you know, there've been a lot of things I've struggled with, you know. I have a lot of bad memories, you know, and like I react to these things, and, you know, and it's very hard, you know, this world, you know, but I guess you have to learn to adjust and make compromises, you know. You have to learn to accept things. Face value,
really. Yep. So what I was saying is that getting married by Elvis in a situation where you're just drunk and you just don't know what's happening, so that's faith. But if you get married in a situation which is normal, even if you get married by Elvis, but it's basically a situation where you choose to marry someone because you have reason to believe this person is going to be a good person for you. So that's belief. Belief means that you don't know for sure, but it's evidence-based. Knowledge means that you have five-finger clarity. Someone says you have five fingers, it's clear. Do I know for sure? Maybe I have a six-finger growing out here. It's made out of neutrons. How am I supposed to know? I can't know for 100% clear. There's no way I could put in any piece of information into a laboratory and know for sure. Because every scientific fact is really a theory. Science.
Well, that's what happens in Kohelet. He goes through, you know, I observed this. He was careful.
Yes.
I mean, he was a nut. He was an assembler of the wisdom of his day, and he saw things and he observed them, and he came to conclusions, except that on the other side of those conclusions, he believed something different than that. So he had conclusions about women, about how a woman were a horror, and on the other side, he believed that a man should be married and that's the best way to live. He believed it. It was so. That's why the book is so confusing, because he rails about all the things that he observed, but underneath it, he believes that God is just. He believes that. He sees all this arbitrary judgment and wicked men thrive and righteous men suffer but he still believes that God is just and he believes that he just can't understand.
It's interesting that you're saying that like you know like he said that man
I
should,
interrupted
that, that,
you,
a man should, man should, that a man should be married and that's like you know that's the way. Life should be, you know, and I guess the other interesting thing is, like, you know, and is why is it like, you know, that a lot of people do get married, you know, and like, you know, and they find their place and they find their spouse, you know, but then a lot of other people, I mean, they strike out, you know, they can't find the right person, you know, I mean, there's many divorces, many breakups, you know, I mean, many people wind up being single all their life, you know, they just never get the right break, you know.
I have a daughter who was single. Her
I mean, I've been single all my life. I tried a whole bunch of times. I mean, to find the right person, it never worked out ever.
You haven't found her yet. You haven't found her yet. Keep looking.
Yeah. Is it possible that an older middle management can still?
Of course.
Because I'm 50. I'm 55 years old now. I mean, I'm still single. Still not.
Everything's possible.
Anything is possible. You know?
It comes to God.
And I think just like Hashem is merciful upon us, I think we have to learn to be merciful upon ourselves too.
Yeah.
I think that's very true.
Very wise. So just to finish up, basically, what I'm saying is that this time of year, we have an ability to tap into a deeper level of free will, a deeper level of self-awareness, where we could deal with the issues of Kohelet. We could deal with the issues of Kohelet and say, look, I don't know why God does things. I don't understand it, but I have a level of understanding where I see that the evil in this world is the purpose of it, at least. I don't know the reason, but the purpose of it is to become myself. You know, I can't become myself without this environment in this world, which is evil through and through. There's evil in this world. I don't know why God does it, but I know the purpose of it. The purpose of it is that it should create friction, that I should be able to become a unique individual, and the purpose of becoming a unique individual is to choose relationship, choose connection to God. And I can't do that without becoming myself. I can't do that, become myself without evil. Evil is a necessary, and that's why we deal with Satan during the high holidays. We say we build a shofar to confuse Satan. We throw a goat off a cliff, scapegoat, to appease Satan. What's this appeasing Satan? Because Satan is an angel that's created to fight us. And the reason God created to fight us is because this angel is enable us to become ourselves. And that's the difference between Netzavim and Vayelech. Netzavim, standing, is when you're angelic. Angelic means I have no choice. Angelic means I'm not in control of myself. There are things outside of myself that control me. And like an angel, I basically am forced to be who I am. Vayelech teaches us that we can walk. We actually have the ability to overcome the difficulties we have, to take the blanket off the evil incarnation, say he has no legs, he cannot walk. I could walk. I could choose what kind of person I'm going to be. I could overcome an entire year of action, like we said in Rosh Hashanah, with scales weighing me who I am, and saying, you know what, I don't need to be defined by my actions last year. I could define myself by what I want. And what I want, like you pointed out, Roy, is not just what I desire. It has to do with who I am. And getting in touch with who I am, and understanding what kind of person am I creating. And that person I'm creating, we say tshuva, tshuva means return, means we look back at what we are in our essence, where we come from, our family history, our how we connect to God who created us. Those are the issues that we look to in Yom Kippur, and we say to ourselves, who am I? And we make choices based on that connection. And the contemplation we do in this month, it's not something we're supposed to do the whole year. It's only this time of year. We have 10 days to contemplate, what kind of person do I want to be? What kind of person am I? I quote that Marvel Comics movie, amazing line about I forgot the name of the comic, the movie, but basically it's a story about evil parents who have superpowers, and they're basically destroying the world. And the kids find out that their parents have these superpowers, and the parents are evil. And the kids say, you know what? We're going to fight our parents, and we're going to counter the evil that they're creating, and we're going to be good. We're going to be forces of good. Very interesting premise. So the line that I heard when I heard this trailer for this television show, whatever it is, I was like, this is exactly Yom Kippur. He says, in Rosh Hashanah, it says, you can't know who you are until you know what you are. Which means these kids said to myself, they can't become good and fight evil until they realize that their parents, where they come from, is the basis of who they will be. So in other words, they have to get in touch with themselves through their parents, because their parents are their DNA. The parents created who the parents are the function. They have to like their parents, but to know where they come from. They get in touch with themselves. And when you get in touch with yourself, with who you are, or what you are, then you can create who you are. So it's not separate. These two things are equal. It's the truth. When we say talk about truth, it's a personal truth. It's your five finger clarity. You have clarity of who you are and what you're supposed to do with your life and who you're supposed to become. And this is the gift that God gave us of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's a time which we could choose to become the type of individual that we're meant to be. And that part of that is relationship with God. We realize that having a relationship with God is something that's meant to be, something that is who, part of our DNA. It's part of our who we are, and it's part of what we are. And Yom Kippur enables us to do that by cutting ourselves off from the world and spending one day and saying, God, I love you. I care about you. I'm choosing to relate to you. I'm choosing to say to you, the perfect example is what Yitzhak Leib Ben Berdichev used to bring a list of things that God hurt him and did bad to him and the bad things that happened to him in his life. He says, God, I'll forgive you if you forgive me. Right? It's a beautiful line. It's an unbelievable line. It's actually what Yom Kippur is about. Yom Kippur is about forgiving God because realizing that you and God are meant to be with each other. Like just like your spouse. It's not, I don't use God as a vending machine. I'm not saying, God, give me my list of things I want. I'm saying, God, I love you because you're you and I'm meant to be with you. And that realization overcomes all the evil, overcomes all the negativity. It overcomes Satan. It overcomes the bad things that happen to you. Because you say, I don't care about those things. These things are minute. They're not the main thing. The main thing is that I'm with you. That's what we're supposed to say to our spouse. We're supposed to learn that. Because the spouse is meant to be. We're supposed to meet each other. Because the fact, and you ask, how do you know? You know because it happened. The fact that you got married to this person is a function of reality. Because it would not have happened if it wasn't meant to be. And that's only, you only can say that if you believe in truth. You believe there's a concept called truth. You believe that God is hidden behind the scene. That's what we say. Esther's from the Torah, where we're going to learn Esther from. That God will hide his face from us. Because God is behind the scenes. Just like by Purim. Purim, we got saved from the Holocaust. The Holocaust was supposed to happen. But God was behind the scenes. Not manipulating, but he was behind the scenes bearing out truth. Bearing out truths. Realities. Personal realities, realizing that Esther had a place in the world that was meant to be from the beginning of time, because her name is in the Chumash. The Chumash was created at from the beginning of time. So the fact that Esther existed and she became who she became was meant to be. But she had no choice. No, she was just bringing out through her choice what was meant to be, who she was supposed to become. And that's what Mordechai says to her. Mordechai says to her, she says, I'm scared to go to the king. I'm scared to go to him to save the Jews. So he says to her, the most amazing line in the whole Chumash. He says, if you don't go, the Jews will be saved by somebody else. We don't need you. You think you're saving the Jews? The Jews were meant to be saved in the beginning of time. But if you don't go, then you're going to lose out. You're not going to become who you're supposed to become. So you have to choose, Esther, to become yourself. And if you don't, then you're going to be pushed away. You're going to lose. The Jews will be saved. We don't need you. You think we need you? It's a joke. Once Esther heard that, she acted. She realized, I don't have to worry about whether the Jews survive or not. It's not up to me. The Jews are meant to survive. I have to connect myself to truth. I have to realize I am part of the truth. And that's what Yom Kippur is. Yom Kippur is a day which we recognize that we are part of the truth. We are part of the truth of God because our lives are meaningful and matter because they are in the context of God, and therefore when we make choices, we choose in this context of reality, our personal reality connecting to God's reality. And that's what Yom Kippur is about, and that's what Vayelech is an introduction to Yom Kippur.
And maybe you just define the whole thing that, like, you know, when you were saying that God was like, you know, like, creating reality and bearing truth, you know, like maybe that's why what happens in this world happens, you know, like God is like bearing truth.
Yeah, exactly,
creating
right.
Reality. And maybe like, you know, when you were saying like Beshert, you know, that maybe regardless of what happens, whether it's bad or good, you know, that I guess it was meant to happen.
That's right.
Like, you know, like, I mean, because he felt it was, that's what he felt was best, you know.
Yep.
Very, very, very powerful.
And you know, you can carry that further. And maybe you haven't found your Bashir yet because you weren't ready to find your Bashir yet, and doesn't mean that there's not a Bashir out there.
Okay, and we all made a lot of very good points of view, especially you, Rabbi, when you said a lot of very, very powerful statements.
That's my job.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, I got to get going.
Yeah. You too.
I'm ready for Sunday. Eagles are going to play the Jets. Who the